From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT, with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast.
Welcome to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. Jesse Johnson lost his pizza business because he fed an unvaccinated man a pizza while none of his friends in the restaurant business said or did anything to help. They watched a brother burn in the street because he fed a man a pizza. But it was much more than that, actually. If that's all he did, he probably could have skated by, but he engaged his voice in the battle. He spoke truth to power and wrongly assumed others would fall in line with his example. And boy, can I relate. I'm excited to get into this story with him now. He's here with us. Hello, Jesse. Thanks for coming on, man. How are you?
I'm excellent, Joseph. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man, your story is pretty awesome. And let's start off with the name of your establishment, or one of your establishments that you had, Without Papers Pizza. Of course, you know, this thing comes across my desk. I'm looking at, oh, Without Papers. That's a play on the vaccine papers that he took a stand against, Without Papers. But no, you named this thing Without Papers long before this ever happened. This is like an example of life foreshadowing something, I think.
It is exactly that. Yeah, it was prophetic. Without Papers Pizza was basically a play on the term WAP, which was our original name. And we ended up settling on Without Papers Pizza after some food critics asked us if we were going to be part of the Neapolitan Pizza Association. And my business partner and chef got angry and said, no, you know, we're not going to be buying those tomatoes from this and that flour from here. We're going to be Without Papers. And at that moment, I decided that, you know what, let's call it Without Papers Pizza. And, you know, most people refer to it as WAP.
I just think that part of it's fascinating. Have you spent any time thinking about that? Like thinking about
the name? I've spent a lot of time thinking about it. There's a lot of things that make me think that for some reason, you know, I was destined for this. I didn't even actually think of the name until after I had come up with my stance. You know, it's funny that it didn't come to mind, but about a day after, I was like, oh my God, you know, we called it Without Papers Pizza and we just got destroyed for refusing to check papers.
Well, yeah. So let's go through the story a little bit. So you had more than one restaurant and you had three houses and all this other stuff. You had a lot going for you. Tell us a little bit of the story, build us up to where it happened, to where you lost all of it.
Sure. I'm a born and raised Calgarian. I opened my first restaurant in the neighborhood of Inglewood in 2001. It was called Succo Cafe Italia. It was an Italian restaurant. I operated that by itself until 2011, when we opened up Without Papers. And for about 7 years, I was operating both at the same time. And they were literally right beside each other. In March of 2020, and let me just kind of back up with Without Papers Pizza. Without Papers was really a special place. I understood a long time ago in the restaurant industry that most people don't really remember the food. And although, you know, we did exquisite food, my partner was an exceptional chef who came from a family of immigrants in Italy that understood food from the most basic of elements of where, you know, if you don't grow it and you don't know how to raise it and slaughter it, you're going to starve. But I understood that the experience was what most people remembered, and Without Papers was truly all about an experience. It was a very high energy, very high vibration, a beautiful place that had a wonderful chi to it. And in March of 2020, the pandemic hit. Like all of us, you know, for the first little bit, we were just wondering, you know, what the heck's going on, you know. And on the Monday, which was March 16th, was the first day of the lockdowns in Alberta, Canada. And I saw, you know, this beautiful, lovely place of love all of a sudden turn into a, you know, a mausoleum. And for months on end, my business model turned from creating this happy, wonderful, exciting environment to handing pizzas to, you know, to delivery drivers. And it was probably the most depressing moment of my life. We suffered through that for about 18 months. It was lockdown, open again, lockdown, open again, lockdown, open again, masks, you know, distancing, put these dots on the floor, put signs up all over the place, reminding people that they're going to die and grandmother is going to die and all this sort of stuff. And by the time they decided to enact the vaccine passport, which was in September of 2021, when 13 counselors in the city of Calgary, who basically consulted with none of their constituents, decided to enact a law that essentially divided Canada, pitted family against family, peer against peer, and friend against friend, and made me discriminate 25% of my customers based on their personal medical decisions, which should have never been made public, but they were forced to make them public. And upon doing so, they were to be vilified and ostracized from society. When I saw that coming, I immediately recognized first that it was a disgusting, heinous act. B, that it was based on nothing else other than political science. And C, I could see with the whole narrative of the pandemic of them taking and then stopping, a little taking and then stopping, taking and then stopping. I read into it that me, as an unvaccinated person, am soon not going to be able to run my business, to own my business, unless I take that experimental jab. By that point in the apocalypse, I knew that there was no way in hell I was ever going to take that vaccine.
So let's back it up a little bit. You went through the whole history of what happened really quick right there. And that's good. I'm glad we got that story established. But I'm assuming you sort of saw through this as a propaganda campaign that was trying to control society and sort of nefarious relatively early on. Did you have a problem enforcing masks and whatnot and the ridiculousness, especially in restaurants where the whole thing of walking into the restaurant, put your mask on, when you go to the bathroom, put it on, when you sit down, you can take it off, you can eat, you know, there's the absurdity of that. That must have driven you crazy.
It drove me batty. And I would say that at day three of the pandemic, I was seriously questioning the narrative. I saw no evidence whatsoever of what it was that they were telling me. I quickly started to recognize the propaganda that they were feeding everybody through the machine. And I could see the fear that was being instilled in fear into people. And that that essentially was the narrative. And, you know, a few months into it, you know, you started to hear that word of the vaccine, the vaccine, the vaccine. And, you know, I quickly came to the conclusion that, you know, the only reason the pandemic was created was to sell the vaccine. I soon, you know, shortly after that, I started to started to recognize the resemblance to communism, essentially. I've come to the point that, you know, COVID was nothing more than the installation of communism in Commonwealth and NATO countries.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems very obvious at this point. I think it's becoming more and more clear to even the people that went along with it. Did you play along though in terms of the mask? We'll get off the mask thing soon, but it's just such an important aspect of it.
Yeah, I truly did. I recognized it immediately as not so much anything to do with your safety. The whole premise of it was ludicrous, you know, that you were going to wear this cotton, you know, t-shirt over your face, or this ridiculous mask that prevented the transmission of nothing, and that all of it was meant only to remove you of your identity and to assimilate you into the Borg. A friend of mine owned a company that she did glitter cosmetics, and she came out with a lot of companies who came out, you know, starting to sell masks, and I don't blame them. You know, you had to try to figure out a way to make ends meet through the apocalypse, but she came out with these glitter masks, and they were basically like masks that, you know, had sparkles and rhinestones on them and stuff. And I used to wear them every day. And that was, you know, sort of my first sign of my first way of protest. When they brought those masks out, my job was to run the room. As soon as the lineup dissipated, I would leave the room, you know, and I had never done that for 20 years. It was always my room, and I thrived on the energy of it. I couldn't stand being in my own restaurant, you know, that I had to wear a mask. It was mind-boggling. And then the customers that would come in that would try to, you know, police it for me, it was just, it was
right. Sad.
Saturday.
Thinking you were on their team. Yeah, I mean, you were in a tough position there with a business. I could totally understand caving into the mask aspect. I was in New York at the time. I did the bandana thing. Mine was like, oh, this is my David Lee Roth thing, and I wore it around my neck. And then if I passed an old person in the street, out of respect for their fear and panic in their eyes, I would put it up over my, you know. But that's the way I played it. But I wasn't running a public business. But I can relate to a lot of aspects of this story because I'm a singer-songwriter, been a performer for a lot of years, and I used my voice early on as well and spoke out against it, got smeared relentlessly, lost a lot of stuff, booking agent, management, record deal, all this kind of stuff. And I've heard you talk in interviews as well and thinking, and yeah, the story is you fed an unvaccinated guy a pizza and that's how you lost it. But really how you lost it is because you used your voice. Isn't that right?
That's exactly it. And I had learned throughout the last few years that there was no sense in apologizing, that it, and the woke left, you know, was determined to, you know, to expose whatever they deemed as evil. And I knew that, you know, my mindset was going to cause me to get exposed. There was no way I was going to enforce that passport. Right. There was no way I was going to turn my father away, my cousin away, my friend away from coming into my restaurant. And I honestly thought that this was so obviously A, illegal, and B, immoral, that, you know, I would be the first of many to speak out against it. I unfortunately was shocked that I wasn't. But on the day that they implemented it, which was a Monday, September 20th, that was the day that I came out and said, I'm not going to be participating in the medical segregation of society.
I mean, I brought up the word segregation in some of my posts as well. And boy, did I get hammered for even using that word. But there's really not a word that
you don't want to use that analogy, isn't it? But, yeah.
Well, it's not, you know, it is what it is. It's called segregation. And there's, you know, not too many adequate synonyms for segregation, funnily enough, because I looked, because I did take so much heat from using that word. And there's separatism, but it doesn't quite hit the mark, you know? So,
no.
I mean, it's the Orwellian language police thing that happened as well. I mean, this, yeah. So, but I also heard you talk about the fact that some restaurants, they probably just quietly didn't go along with it. Like they also didn't necessarily enforce vaccine passports, but it's really the element of the fact that you took to your voice and you broadcasted this and you resisted. What do you think about you? What's in you that urged you to risk everything you had built and worked for to fight this fight? What do you think that is about you?
I have children, I honestly wanted to fight for their rights, for my rights, for the rights of all Canadians. I had grown tired and weary of talking with people and just getting the same response from everybody. Oh, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? You know. By the time they enacted that passport, they had mentally worn me down. They really have. And, you know, when I look back on it, it most certainly was not, you know, the wisest of business decisions. It essentially, you know, it broke me and it took away something that was my proudest achievement. You know, I don't know what it was that caused me to speak out. I wanted to make a difference. I thought this was it. You know, I'd watched so many other restaurants and businesses all through the apocalypse, you know, when the lockdowns began and they, you know, they resisted that and they were, you know, immediately crushed. And I you know, even though I opposed all the lockdowns, I knew that, you know, the narrative wasn't quite right yet to do it. And by the time they came out with that vaccine passport, I thought that, well, this is the moment, you know, this is the time. If you're going to make a stand, if you want to fight, this is the time to do it. And I had honestly thought the restaurant industry is fraught with peril, And there's always a restaurant that's, you know, just teetering on the edge of financial ruin, you know, and you're always waiting and praying that the next day is going to be your salvation. And, you know, I had thought that, okay, you know, we're 18 months into this now. There must be a whole whack load of restaurants that are just teetering on the edge, waiting, you know, waiting for the hammer to come down, and that perhaps, you know, I can lead the way, and that these people who have nothing to fear and nothing to lose, or lots to fear, sorry, but nothing to lose, will follow. But that didn't happen. And, you know, when I look back on it now, I realize that the propaganda, the censorship, the cancel, all of it, you know, was what played in my coming down. The other thing that happened as well that I failed to realize and was naive about is that I talked about communism earlier, but compliance in the restaurant industry was bought in two different ways. One was by my destruction, to be made example of, and two was every restaurant's dependence on government handouts. And so all those restaurants that I thought were teetering on the edge were not quite as close to the edge at that time as I thought, because all of them were receiving the handouts from the government to stay closed, to push the narrative and to stay quiet, you know. And now, as it turns out, every single restaurant in Canada, in my opinion, is a slave to the government. They all owe the government a demand loan, that was a CEBA loan, it was called, that essentially every restaurant in Canada took out. I'm going to wager that
29% interest, right?
29% interest. They owe that money.
that's nuts.
Better off if they owed it to the Hell's Angels. At least the Hell's Angels
exactly.
Has the world and recognizes that destroying your business does not aid them in, you know, in collecting the debt that is owed. Whereas CRA is nothing but an agent of destruction. And these restaurants,
they're
now
gangsters, Jesse.
They're gangsters.
Let me go to a quick break. We'll be right back with Jesse Johnson and his heroic story. We got to get this guy his pizza restaurants back, y'all. Keep listening. We'll be right back with more on TNT.
TNT Radio's Michael Parker.
Luckily, I don't have babies in the house anymore. My daughters are grown up, so I don't have to worry about this. But the Food and Drug Administration has announced that a baby formula maker has now issued a voluntary recall of its formula after it was found by a third party that it had a potential cross-contamination with, guess what? Potentially deadly bacteria. Now, you remember this past year, we had the Abbott run closure of a Michigan plant, which was the largest maker of baby formula in the U.S., and that caused huge problems, and that was a result of supposedly contamination hazards. Well, now we've got another one. This recall involves a product called ByHeart's Whole Nutrition Infant Formula. If it was in my house and I had an infant, I would either return it or I would just throw it out. I wouldn't even fool with trying to see. So it is a recall of baby formula, and I hope that it won't get to the extent of the one last year, because that really did cause a lot of problems for a lot of people.
Deep Program with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Child labor and toxic leaks, the price we pay for a greener future. Lighting the fuse for freedom, today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. We need more heroic people like Jesse Johnson, people that are unafraid to speak truth to power, or probably do it anyway. Now, Jesse, for me, the denouement, the crescendo of my cancellation came with a hit piece in the LA Times Sunday art section, five pages, just smearing me relentlessly. How did it work for you? I relate to you because of the whole, they make an example out of people, and we go into it thinking naively that, oh, if I speak truth to power, others will fall in line. And that's pretty funny in hindsight. You got to laugh. But how did it work for you? You start speaking out, then what's the result? Do people start attacking you on social media? Explain to us how you actually went from that to being attacked to actually losing the businesses.
Well, my first post that I made was decidedly vague in order to not incriminate myself. I made a statement saying that I believe in the equality of all Canadians and I believe in freedom and choice, but I never said specifically right. what it was that I was doing.
Oh, and, you said enough, Jesse. You said enough.
In that time.
You can't tiptoe through the tulips. You think you can, but you really can't. Yeah.
Well, when I made that statement, it immediately caused an uproar on social media. And there was a social media influencer in Calgary who was a friend of mine, Julie Van Rosendahl. And I refer to her now as the Cookie Monster. She's a food blogger and so on. She literally lived in our neighborhood, and I supported her for 2 decades. She held my hand up on TV when we first opened Without Papers, we're the best. And I donated to her cause when asked for, when not asked for. And we were big into live music. We had bands every weekend. Her husband would come and all stuff. Anyway, she reached out, she started to attack me. And I quickly was like, well, what the hell's going on here, Julie, And so I sent her an email and just said, Julie, we're friends, why don't you just send me, you come by, have a coffee, we can talk, you live down the street. She was not interested in it, right? And then she tore me apart in an email saying, children are dying and I'm causing humanity to suffer and all this sort of stuff. And I realized oh my God. And so I had all these people, on my decidedly vague statement asked me what it was. And so I lost it. I said, well, I'll tell you exactly what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to enforce bylaw 65M2021. And the city of Calgary can take that vaccine passport and shove it right up its ass. That backfired. And they shoved it right up mine, unfortunately. But I quickly learned that the mainstream media was not an ally of mine, that if I spoke to CBC and said yes, they would print no. I ended up taking solace with Rebel News. They are the alternative news source in Canada. And they ended up staying in my restaurant for the final 12 days from when I'd made my statement to when they closed me. I was holed up in there with Sydney Prezard. And they allowed my voice to be heard where, it normally wouldn't have been heard. Propaganda in Canada is at a dystopian Orwellian level. The censorship is horrifying.
Yeah, they used to say about Canada down here in America, America done right. We always used to just have nothing but they're all nice up in Canada. And then people would say, Canada's America done right. But yo, you guys outdid us in the level of oppression and censorship. But it was not that great here, particularly in New York and LA. I was in New York through this whole thing. And listening to your story reminded me of going into I used to have the cultural keys to the city. I did this museum art show where I lived in this museum on Park Avenue for weeks before the pandemic hit. I could play at the best places. You know what I mean? I was welcome everywhere. And then cut to me speaking out and then getting kicked, then having some kid at Starbucks kick me out because I didn't have papers.
I couldn't
really
believe
wild
what
we lived
in New
through.
York. I got married in New York City. I'd been to New York. I got married at City Hall, stayed at the Hilton across the street from the World Trade Center just a few weeks before your government blew it up. And the restaurants all over New York. And I really, really, really love New York City. And it saddened me,
me
greatly
too.
To see it turn into a left woke cesspool. It broke my heart.
It's brutal. Now listen, you're with the alternative media. You're seeing a side of humanity that you didn't really understand before, I guess. I mean, this has really been a disappointing reveal about human nature, I think, all of this. And so what do you do next? They close the doors. You still have a house or what? I mean, because didn't you get all the way to where you're living in your van?
Yeah. This unfortunately divided my family as well. And, it's caused me to get divorced and to lose quite a few.
Oh, people. Man. Your wife was for all the vaccine papers and all that?
She was literally writing the COVID compliance protocol for the University of Calgary when I came out. I had a year and a half to wake up and to see what was going on and, you know, and not to.
Oh, man.
There was just no making headway, unfortunately. And that was the final straw that broke it. I cry a little bit. I gave, 20 years to the neighborhood that I operated in. I was a pillar of the community. I loved where I lived. If I walked down the street, I was like the king of Kensington, everybody inviting me in,
right. Come
in, drink. And when I spoke out against the vaccine passport, professed love over hate, I was met with the most intense vitriol that I've ever seen in my whole life. Neighbors that normally would have greeted me with a smile and a kiss and a handshake were driving by and giving me the finger. It was unreal.
Bro. I can relate, man. I received enormous amounts of hate, dude. And I still even get it. I'm starting to get more love again, but it's not easy. And I did not know that this personal aspect was involved in your story. I didn't know it hit that deep. That's really, really crazy. Let's go into more and then talk about the sort of rebirth process that we're all embarking on, hopefully, right after the headlines on TNT.
TNT Radio News.
Bring the news.
5, 4, 3, 2. Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. European countries are failing to agree on the terms of a special war crimes tribunal for Ukraine. Ukraine's launched its largest attack on the Donetsk region in 8 years, setting buildings ablaze in the capital as residents slept. And the Vatican has apologised to Russia over derogatory remarks made by the Pope last month aimed at ethnic groups in the country.
I am at that phase of Christmas where I am looking at stuff around my house and thinking, yeah, I can just wrap that.
From our family to yours.
Happy holidays.
I love Christmas!
TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. We're talking to Jesse Johnson from Without Papers Pizza. Now, Jesse, do you think about this thing? I mean, when you encounter that kind of loss, the only thing comparable to it is stories you read in the Bible. I mean, this stuff gets biblical. And I don't know about you, but the only way I can frame it when you're immersed in this kind of loss is sort of some kind of spiritual journey. And it certainly seems like we're in a spiritual war. How are you framing this to survive psychologically?
I don't know that I've quite recovered, to be quite honest with you. This winter has been more difficult even than last winter. At least last winter, after they shut my restaurant down, I devoted, all my time and energy into protest and to battling what I thought was evil. And that energy is now has kind of gone from me, because the protests have stopped and, people think that we're safe again and all this sort of stuff. And this winter has been very difficult for me, but, I realize that this is literally, it is a spiritual awakening. And I truly believe that, as we leave the age of Pisces and enter into the age of Aquarius, that there people around the world are waking up to the fact that we've essentially been enslaved for generations. We've been lied to our entire lives. They've been trying to poison us of our entire lives. And everything we thought was real was in fact alive. And the one solace I take is that, there's always a defector, and the defector always comes from the dark side, from the people who haven't seen the light, and they defect to our side. And nobody, not a single person, defects from our side to the darkness. It causes me to have hope. I only wish that it would happen quicker.
Well, I mean, I think that the only thing we can do is turn to God in times like this. So I don't know. It's like, I really hope you find that kind 100%. Of meaning and solace in this and realize that these things happen for a reason. There's no way that you're just going to be left hanging in total loss, especially when what what brought you to that place is such a courageous act, in my view. You know what I mean?
I 100%. I wasn't spiritual before, you know, and I started to adopt that attitude of you know, there is no God, and this atheist scientific point of view. But I realize now that, you know, God is light, and that God will shine the path for my journey, and will provide me with everything I need. And all the material possessions that I previously had and enjoyed were, in fact, nothing. They were nothing whatsoever. And all I need is Mother Earth and the goodness that she provides me, the air that I breathe, the water that I drink, and the food that I eat, and the love that surrounds me.
And a purpose, because material possessions don't really make us happy. But what does make us happy is some kind of purpose towards rebuilding something. You know, success is the sort of steady progress of a worthy ideal, so says Earl Nightingale. And I really think, like, we need to have that, especially as men, to feel like, I don't know, like life isn't just drudgery. Do you have anything like that in your sight lines? Any vision about rebuilding something?
You know, that's been the hardest part for me, is that, you know, my restaurant was my purpose. I truly loved it. You know, and every day it was just, you know, how do I make this place better, and how do I make it busier, and, you know, how do I make it cooler, and how do I make the experience more positive? There was no other place that I wanted to be. And when they took that away from me, you know, my purpose was at first transitioned into protest. But, you know, now I haven't found my purpose yet, and it causes me a lot of anguish. I really wish that I keep on hoping and praying every day that, you know, that my purpose is going to come to me and I can devote my time to it. But, you know, it's hard. Depression is hard to deal with. I've never suffered through it before. And, you know, you realize just how debilitating it is, and how much of your energy it saps away, and how much of your focus it drains. I know that I will find purpose again. I don't know that it will be in the restaurant industry. I'm a bit jaded. I'm a bit sour. I'm a bit upset that, you know, so many of my brothers and sisters in the industry just, you know, towed the line and complied and discriminated their fellow man. It really disappoints me. I don't know what my purpose is, brother. I don't. I hope I find it soon.
The thing about it is, like, that stuff that happened is enraging, right? And so you have all this righteous anger, but the only way out of it is to let it go and forgive. It's like, and it's the hardest thing in the world to do, but that, like, you know, they say, like, anger or resentment is so, like, the punishment you're trying to put on somebody else, but really you're punishing yourself. So, and it's really difficult to do, especially when you feel like you've been wrong to this degree. But the only way to get past it and to find that purpose and to overcome that depression is to finally let that go. And with this PSYOP that we've been under, it's an interesting new phase of it, because for the people that didn't take a stand, you know, there was that article that came out asking for amnesty of those that chastised the so-called unvaccinated or whatever. And they're trying to kind of just pretend like none of this happened or it wasn't that big of a deal. Meanwhile, like, people such as yourself got lost in the wreckage of it by trying to take a real stand by what was actually a really significant thing. But so the PSYOP works that it's like, oh, that was no big deal. What, are you still upset about all that? Like, just get on with it. You know what I mean?
No, it's exactly it. And I am angry, Joseph. I really am. I'm trying to shake that anger, man. I really am. You know, but it's just buried deep, and I can't quite get it out yet. But I'm waiting for it to come out, man. And when it does, it's going to be a glorious, glorious moment. I hope that this interview with you will help me achieve that goal.
I hope so too. Listen, have you ever heard of this prayer mantra, Hawaiian prayer mantra called Ho'oponopono?
No. Yes, but no.
All right. I want you to take this seriously. and look it up on YouTube or whatever like that. There's plenty of them. There's tons of mantras. You can even sleep with it all night long, 8 hours, you know, and it's, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. And the idea is that we're responsible for everything in our field of consciousness. So everything that happened to us, we have to finally take responsibility that we created it, even if it seems like we didn't. And what this does is it empowers us in situations such as this, you know, where we feel victimized by something. That's where this Ho'oponopono work is really beautiful, because it's like to that situation, you're saying, I love you because you have taken me into my soul's journey to this place where ultimately I will evolve into something greater than I was before. I love you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I cast you as this sort of, you know, negative force. So in other words, you're taking responsibility for everything. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Please forgive me for casting you this way. You see what I mean? This is playing a trick in a way that you are responsible for everything. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And thank you. Thank you for bringing me here. And it really is incredibly powerful. It's a powerful practice. Wake up in the morning, put it on your headphones, go on a run listening to Ho'oponopono, and sleep with it at night, and just release, man. And that purpose will come back to you, and that forgiveness will come back to you, because you'll have taken responsibility for everything in your field of consciousness. And this is there's a guy, a psychologist by the name of Dr. Hugh Lin. Look up his story. He healed a whole insane asylum in Hawaii or something, just by using this mantra and looking at people's folders or whatever, the patient info. But I mean, this is a really powerful practice, because I would really love to see you overcome this. And it's not that you weren't victimized in this situation, but it's that the way life operates is we all have to just constantly take responsibility for everything that happens to us every step of the way, as unfair as that may seem to our rational minds.
Thank you, sir. I will make sure to do that tonight.
Yeah, please do. And let me know what you think about it. This is something I discovered a long time ago, and it's done huge, huge things for me in my life. So what about your business partner and all this? You speak so highly of him, the chef, and he seems like a really cool guy. You guys shared a house together that you had to sell to like pay off the loan sharks that is the government. I don't mean to laugh at that. It's just so absurd. That's why I'm laughing. But where's he in all this? And is there any way you guys can partner up again or anything like that?
I sure hope so, man. He's my brother. I love him. And this has divided us. 20-year business partnership that's been split because of nonsense. He unfortunately had to face the vitriol as well. When I came out with my stance, I told him, like, listen, I'm going to be the face, and you know, you continue on. But unfortunately, it broke us as well. And you know, I was his yin to my yang. And I took care of the front, he took care of the back, and it was beautiful. And unfortunately, it's divided us right now, but I truly hope that, you know, the Lord will bring us back together again, because, you know, divided, we are weak, and together we're strong. So I hope we can make something happen again now.
When you think of all those people in your life that betrayed you as well, like if you go on a run, because the running is really important to overcome depression, just getting out there and breathing air and doing that mantra work, and then thinking of the people that let you down and saying that to them, and you're just releasing, you're releasing, you're releasing. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's so powerful, and it'll surprise you how some people will come back into your life, and how you'll have recast them, and they'll be like healed relationships as a result of it. You know, it's very, very magical. Now, when we look at the world at large right now, we were talking a little bit about the PSYOP, like, oh, that was no big deal. Just get over it. Get back on with your life. And everybody's on social media acting like nothing ever happened and all that kind of stuff. But there is truth in that now the narrative has wildly changed. Like, say, if you had made the posts that got you into trouble back then, if you made them now, you wouldn't really get any pushback from them at all. You'd probably get like one or two lunatics, and the rest of the people would be like, yeah, Jesse, I totally agree. As this shifts, I mean, do you see any, like, anything shifting in your life? Has anyone come back to you, or is there any sort of relief you feel, or is it just frustrating that it's not moving fast enough?
No, nobody's come back into my life yet. And, you know, I honestly lost 99% of the people in my life, because of my, you know, quite vocal stance. And I do agree with you. I do see that the narrative is changing. You know, unfortunately, in Canada, it's not changing quite enough. And I truly marvel at the PSYOP. I spent a lot of time trying to think, you know, who is it that could have possibly masterminded this absolutely cunning, mischievous, devious, division of society? And, you know, you come to realize that it's none other than the devil itself. But the censorship, as I'd mentioned, in Canada is truly dystopian, Orwellian. And there's still a great many people who either by apathy, and I will say that, you know, one of the reasons that all of this happened was apathy. You know, the millions of people who just stayed quiet while their brothers and sisters drug through the street. But there are just a lot of people who aren't aware, you know, as to what is the real, you know, efficacy of the vaccine. And, you know, in my opinion, it has nothing to do with your health. And all the data that's coming out, the vaccine injury, they're ambivalent to it. I can understand, you know, I mean, it must be a terrible awakening when you do see the truth. I hope that it comes quicker, but for me, it's not coming quick enough. But I've also learned that, you know, my perspective of time before was, I always felt that I never had enough time, you know, in the day, and that I could never accomplish enough. And I always wanted things to happen right away. I was impulsive. And now I realize that, you know, God has a journey, and time is part of it. And time makes up its own decisions, and things happen when they need to happen.
That's right, man. And we're going to get there in the end. Let me go to a quick break. We'll be right back with Jesse Johnson right after these words on TNT.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
I don't know how many of you remember back in 2013 when Navy SEAL Chris Beck came out as transgender. It was a big deal then, and Anderson Cooper did a CNN special on it. Many believe the story was used as propaganda to allow trans people in the military and to popularize the issue. Conservative influencer Robbie Starbuck believes that, and he recently interviewed Beck, who now says that switching sexes destroyed his life. Here's a small clip from the show.
Everything you see on CNN with my face, do not even believe a word of it. Everything that happened to me for the last 10 years, they destroyed my life. I destroyed my life. I'm not a victim. I did it to myself, but I had some help.
Beck decided to discuss all of this now to protect children. Fox quotes him as saying, there are thousands of gender clinics being put up all over America. As soon as kids go in and say, I'm a tomboy, or this makes me feel comfortable, then the psychologist says, oh, you're transgender. And the next day, you're on hormones. Check out the full interview of this American hero, yes indeed, on Rumble, as Chris Beck once again serves his country. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
A new research by John R. Lott Jr., president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Public Choice, found evidence of around 255,000 excess votes, possibly as many as 368,000 for Joe Biden in six swing states where Donald Trump lodged accusations of fraud. Biden only carries these states, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, by a total of 313,253 votes. Excluding Michigan, the gap was 159,065. Courts have rejected challenges to the 2020 presidential vote, generally citing the lack of evidence that any alleged fraud would have altered the outcome in a particular state. Republican plaintiffs argued that since their observers couldn't watch the vote counts or were prevented from seeing other evidence, they couldn't provide such proof without investigations backed by subpoena power. Still, while some judges have agreed that irregularities occurred in 2020, they weren't willing to grant discovery in the absence of evidence that fraud could reverse the election results.
Stop the jab and save lives.
The COVID vaccine does not work.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. We need to support heroes like Jesse Johnson. You can get his artwork, actually, I think, right? Jesse, you got it. There's a link here for withoutpizza.ca, so WOPIZZA.ca. And are you selling some artwork?
Yeah, that's funny. So when the pandemic started, I quickly became skeptical, and I tried to figure out ways to resist and to fight back, without losing my business, which, unfortunately happened. But I had a guy that worked with me, a dear friend, and he worked with me for about 15, 16 years, and he made our dough at Without Papers Pizza. And he's exactly my age, he's 50, and he had just sort of come to that point in his life where, he needed to do something different. And I loved him, and we had met in a bar, actually, in Calgary called The Mortal Coil, and I'd met him because he was drawing comics, and I had this idea in my head of doing a comic, trying to expose the narrative that way. And so we started drawing comics, and then it was a difficult process because, I didn't realize exactly how hard it is to draw a comic. But by the time I came out with my stance, we had gotten pretty good at it. And we started making these comics called City of Fear. And it was basically, exposing all the corrupt politicians in Calgary and Canada that were, imposing these draconian lockdowns and measures and essentially dividing and destroying society. And as we got closer and closer to our destruction, we started to get, ramping up on our production. And I'm really proud of them, and we did them in a format to be printed on a 50 by 70 centimeter sheet, only because that's the ubiquitous frame size that you can buy at IKEA and, find a frame for it for $10. And they're beautiful. They're for sale on our website. They're $30 each for a high quality glossy print.
They're really cool. They kind of, they don't look like R. Crumb, but they remind me of that, I guess, because of the adult drama within them or something. I don't know. They're great.
They're a little dark. Yeah.
They're really fantastic. WOPIZZA, PIZZA.ca. Please support Jesse. So now you were talking about censorship in Canada and it's over the top. But what do you think to Elon Musk and Twitter and the information superhighways at least opening up a little bit? And plus, you have a pretty significant Twitter following. What's your take there? And does that give you any hope?
It does give me some hope. That was one of the things I realized at the beginning, is that when we came out with my stance, the only social media platform I was on was Instagram. And, our posts were just generic, really. I wasn't a fan of social media. Our mantra was always, let's take it to the street, and give a pizza to a person and, let him decide whether he wants to come in. But after we went down, I reached out to Sarah. I harbored myself into social media because it was the only outlet that I had, and didn't realize I was naive to the censorship. Eventually Instagram took down my account. At I had 9,999 followers. I had that for like months, and it didn't matter what I did, how many posts, how many videos I made, I was always at that number kind of deal. And then they deleted it, and I was like, holy Christ, like, where do you, Twitter, it was all censorship, all this sort of stuff. So when Elon took it over, at first I was skeptical, and I still am skeptical. I don't know if he's the savior that everyone makes him out to be, but I can tell you this, he reinstated my account on December 1st. I had 11,000 followers, and now I have close to 25,000. Before, if you even mentioned the word COVID, you got the messages, and you were taken down or shadow banned, and I don't noticing that happening anymore. So Yeah, I love free speech, you know, and it's funny how it blows my mind in the United States of America that there's so many people opposed to free speech, you know, and that they want to limit it and that you know, it's for your protection. And it really saddens me that that seems to be the way that your country is going. I hope that the Patriots down there will unite and, you know, combat the evil that certainly is all around you.
Think about my industry, man, the music business. I mean, if we don't stand for freedom of expression, who is going to? And you got like Jack White campaigning against it. You got Neil Young campaigning against it. You got Elton John. The Rolling
Rage
Stones
against the machine.
Took a knee.
I couldn't believe
Rage
that.
Rage against the machine. I mean, it's just so bizarre. And the whole thing is on the premise that adults must, like, it's infantilizing humanity, basically. You can't handle hearing any kind of alternative views. You're not able to handle that. It's treating everybody like they're children. And to me, I find that super insulting just to mankind, basically. People have instincts, they have brains, they have ability to do research, and they have gut intuition, and they can handle different viewpoints. It's just ridiculous, the fact that the whole thing is based on, oh, humanity, you can't handle different viewpoints. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's sad to me the way the music industry got. I mentioned that, you know, I was a big supporter of live music. My children are musicians, and there's a club across the street from me, Ironwood, and the owners was very good friends with me. I don't think he aligns with my values anymore, unfortunately, but there was that period of time. I don't know if they did it in the States, but in Canada, it was illegal to play music. It was illegal to sing. It was illegal to
Footloose.
Dance. You know,
remember
it was
Footloose,
like a scene out of
Kevin Bacon.
I was like
Footloose.
You know, Footloose.
It's illegal to dance.
I remember
Jesse.
Talking with my buddies, you know, all of my musician friends, because they all hung out at the restaurant, and I'd be like, you know, what's going on, man? Like, I thought you guys were up there spreading love. You know, I go, but the government's telling me you're up there spreading disease and pestilence. You know, which one is it, bro? Which one? You know, and I tried to get my musician friends to stand up and fight, but that again, you know, was another effect of the communism. You know, these musicians who before had to go and, you know, play a gig and maybe make $100 if they were lucky in some club, you know, now they were just staying home and getting paid $2,000 a month by Trudeau to support the narrative, you know, and that's how they push this thing. It really saddens me what happened to the music industry. Really, 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 you know. Yeah, shilling in the name of, man.
Shilling in the name of, indeed. But, you know, the truth is coming. The truth is coming like a freight train. And all those people that demonized you, most of them at this point know you were right. That's the thing. And this time in history is going to embarrass the people that took a stand supporting tyranny and supporting taking down free expression and free speech. This is not how the story ends. I mean, this is all going to come out. And it's going to be an embarrassment for anyone who said unvaccinated people should be banished from society and all this other kind of thing. These are videos that are going to emerge that people are going to want to try to live down and are going to have to make statements. You know, Tim Robbins already came out and did make statements. Some people have, very few, but there'll be more and more.
I hope so. I really pray to see that, you know, and, you know, that is, I think, part of the process of healing for me, is that I haven't received any apologies and I haven't seen any apologies or, you know, from anybody really in Canada who supported the tyranny. And, you know, I'm waiting for it to come. And, you know, I truly believe, like you said, with that freight train, that there's three things that can't be hidden for long: the sun, the moon, and the truth. And the truth is coming out. And, you know, I think it's our duty, everyone who's awakened, everyone who sees the tyranny and recognizes the evil, that it's our solemn duty to red pill people all day long, you know, just red pill, red pill, red pill, red pill. Everybody you meet, go for Thanksgiving dinner, talk politics, you know, I mean, just make people aware that what has gone on is truly the darkest moment in my history and quite possibly the history of mankind.
I think it's very possible as well. And, you know, it's not ours to wait for an apology. It's ours to cultivate that within, like I was telling you before about the Ho'oponopono, become the, you know, the badass warrior and just take responsibility for everything in your life and liberate yourself from this point on. But I can guarantee you the apologies are coming your way. Tell people again all the links on where to find you, man. It's been really a great honor to talk to you, Jesse. And, you know, you did a lot of good for mankind, even if you don't feel it right now. I hope that you feel it soon. And I hope you overcome all this. And I'm really sorry for your losses. But I don't think that God took you this far just to leave you hanging in that. I think that there's definitely restoration coming your way.
Thank you, brother. Honestly, this interview has been an awakening for me as well. You are an incredible soul, and I'll remember this conversation for a long time. You can find me on Twitter at WOPIZZA, WOPIZZA. My website is WOPIZZA.ca, and you know, that's really about it. Otherwise, you can find me on the streets of Canada. If there's a protest against COVID and all its ridiculousness, I most likely will be there screaming from the top of my lungs.
All right, Jesse, we're going to have to get an update from you in the next couple months. I'll remember this conversation as well. And go buy some of Jesse's artwork, WOPIZZA.ca. Go buy some. Support the man. We'll see you soon. Keep listening to TNT. We'll be right back with Ruckus.